This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. Is our democracy really based on one man, one vote? And can you really be sure the ballot you drop in the box will actually count? Critics of America's democracy say our election process is just plain unfair. Their proof? Well, who could forget Florida 2000? That experience left the phrase hanging chad on people's lips for months. And this week, there were even allegations of voter irregularities in the Democratic primary races in Texas and Ohio. Some folks argue the problem with our election system is written right into the rules, but other observers have more faith in our modern voting process. So if it ain't really broke, why fiddle with it? Joining me now to hash things out is William Poundstone. He's the author of Gaming the Vote, Why Elections Aren't Fair and What We Can Do About It. Also, Robert Trainum. He's the D.C. Bureau Chief for the Comcast Cable Network, CN8. Bill and Robert, thanks for coming on.
Yes, hi, good to be with you.
So let's start with the basics. Most people think of the American system as one man, one vote. Bill, can you break down for me simply how our electoral process is and is not one person, one vote?
Yeah, well, each person basically indicates what candidate they like best of all on the ballot. And in many situations, that's all you need. But there are situations where you've got more than two strong candidates out there, and then you get into all these vote splitting and spoilers, and you can often have a situation where the most popular candidate doesn't win. So a lot of people, like theorists who have looked into this, say that there really are fairer ways to vote, and we should be looking into that.
Before we get to that, though, when you know, because you have a list of different systems and how they work, how do you fundamentally define fairness? What does fairness mean to you?
It's really that everyone's vote should count exactly the way they want it to count. For instance, to bring up 2000 again, there were a lot of Ralph Nader voters who basically wanted an extremely liberal president. But what they got in Florida, they tipped the vote from Gore to Bush, and they got a conservative president. So that really doesn't make much sense.
Before I move on to Robert, give me one example of a system that might have prevented something like that.
Well, the one, it's actually very interesting. Both Barack Obama and John McCain have been promoting a system known as instant runoff voting. And this is a system where you rank the candidates, like 1, 2, 3. And if you vote for one of these third-party candidates who has no chance of winning, your ballot would actually count for the major party candidate you've ranked higher. So if you liked Nader but you ranked Obama second, your vote would count towards Obama.
Robert, what do you think about this? I mean, instant runoff voting has been used in some municipalities. It's kind of in the experimental stage in a lot of places. Do you think that we should make a big change in how U.S. democracy operates?
No, and here's why. It works. Now, that isn't to say that there isn't chinks in the armor, because there certainly is. We certainly saw that in Florida in 2000. We saw it in Ohio in 2004. And we're currently seeing it now throughout this presidential primary cycle. But let's keep in mind that this is a system that is evolutionary, Farai. If you take a look at the history of this country, whether it be through the women's suffrage movement, through the poll tax, the grandfather clause, obviously all throughout the civil rights movement in the 1960s and early 70s, the process has always been improved through change. And that change has always been when the people themselves, or ourselves, Americans as ourselves, have come up with a better way of voting. Now, that isn't to say that our voting system is near perfect. Gosh darn it, we have 280 million people in this country, and unfortunately, we're going to get it wrong sometimes. But what does work is that every single state in this country participates in the process, whether it be through the primary process or through the general election process. And we have, candidly speaking, come out on head when it comes to making sure that every single vote is counted. We're doing that now through touch tone screening. We're doing that now with advanced 21st technologies out there when it comes to voting. Now, again, let me just be very clear. There's still room for improvement, but I firmly do believe that the current system is working.
Now, again, before I go back to Bill, there's not always one system. We see like the caucuses, the primaries, paper ballots, electronic ballots,
absentee ballots.
Yeah, exactly. People sitting around a room holding hands, talking about who they want. So how are you even supposed to make sense of the fact that we don't really have one standardized system?
Well, I think that's the uniqueness of this country, because the way our country has been founded and the way it's governed is from the bottom up. In other words, the states should have the right to be able to come up with a system that's best for them. The founding fathers of this country specifically made a provision, and at least in their minds, I'm not sure if it was ever written down, and maybe it is through the Constitution, where every single state has the right to be able to come up with their own governing system and their own voting system, i.e. through their state constitution. And, you know, that's the fundamental right that we all have as states' rights.
Bill, when you think about our system today and you think about the idea of not changing things, as Robert would argue, mm-hmm. what are the upsides and downsides of that? Because, you know, any big transformation can also cause huge ripple effects as people mm-hmm. adjust to it. What would it take if you favor instant runoff and the system of kind of tiered voting? How difficult would it be, aside from whether or not people would choose to make that change, how difficult would it be to switch people to that?
Well, I don't think it's difficult at all. The state of North Carolina is now phasing in instant runoff voting. Minneapolis, San Francisco, Berkeley, just this week, Santa Fe, New Mexico adopted it. So it is really something that's starting to get a certain amount of political momentum. I think it really does take a certain amount of education on the part of the public. And I would agree. I mean, it is an evolutionary process. When this country was started, we didn't even have a popular vote for president or senator. That was sort of a retrofit that came in later because people thought about it and realized that it would make sense. So I think particularly with Obama and McCain speaking in favor of it, we're really going to start to have a national conversation about whether there are fairer ways to vote than the plurality vote.
Fry,
please go ahead.
You know, what's very interesting about all of this is, and I'm glad that Bill agrees with the evolutionary process, because there's a huge educational curve that Americans go through every time we try to change the voting system, and albeit for good intentions. Recall, back in 2000, we heard pregnant chads and dimple chads and so forth, and never before we ever let something like that happen again. In 2004, or between 2000 and 2004, all these states, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and these other states, rushed to try to get the touch tone screens up to running for 2004. And guess what happened? There were thousands of people that were in line, particularly in Ohio and Florida, that said, you know what, this is not working for me. I don't understand this. This is way too complicated. So my point is that with change comes time, and with time comes an evolutionary process where we have to educate the American people that this is a good thing, but that's going to take time, at least probably, you know, 10, 15, 20 years before we can actually have, in my opinion, an instant runoff system in this country, national,
you know,
that is.
Robert, I want to ask about these issues of fairness in voting just actually at the polls, because you mentioned Ohio. Just this week, Clinton and Obama's camps cried foul at each other for perceived irregularities in voting in Texas and Ohio, and Obama asked for polls across Ohio to remain open an extra hour and a half. A federal judge okayed that request for some polls, mainly in Cleveland. How does this kind of wrangling reflect not necessarily anything about paper ballots versus electronic, but whether or not governments are making a commitment to allowing enough people to enter the process simply by staffing and issues like that?
Well, it certainly diminishes the public confidence in the voting system when they literally stand up in line at 7 o'clock in the morning, and when the doors open, the poll workers do not know how to work the machines. And that also speaks to when the county commissioners out there and the borough managers out there are screaming for more help from the federal government. And that's the main reason why the federal government passed the Help America Vote Act back in 2001, after the 2000 presidential fiasco, so that this would never happen again. Unfortunately, we're seeing it happen again, as you mentioned, in Ohio and Texas. And what's very interesting about this, Farai, is that oftentimes it happens in minority communities, in communities where people may not be as educated as a upper middle class community, or perhaps the community is where multiple ballots are placed on the ballot, and it's meant to confuse the voter out there. And I think that's where we need to really try to educate the American people, but in specifically in underserved communities where there's mass confusion, and that confusion is based on, predatory folks out there that cause chaos for some type of political gain.
Bill, when you look ahead at this election, and I mean the general election, are we still going to have problems, in your opinion, with electronic voting, with poll access? There's controversies over the voter ID laws as well. What are you looking ahead at?
Yeah, I think that's something to worry about. Again, you don't want to overreact to one problem in one election, and I think the Help America Vote Act, in many senses, was not a terribly good idea. For instance, Ronald Rivest, who's a very famous mathematician at MIT, he's one of the inventors of the RSA system that's used by PayPal and other electronic transactions. He's also looked into the security of electronic voting. And you'd figure if anyone believed in electronic voting, it would be him. But he's really come to the conclusion that it's too easy to hack. You really have to worry about this. And really, the paper ballots are the best way to go. But I hasten to add that with paper ballots, you can still have many other ways of voting, with instant runoff, something called range voting, various other methods.
Robert, when you look ahead, just briefly, what do you see? Do you see an issue where we're going to face some big challenges?
Yes, especially when you have record turnout. And anytime you have record turnout, the system simply, unfortunately, cannot handle the volume of people that are standing in line and voting. And that's when a lot of irregularities happen. That's when a lot of mass confusion happens. If you take a look at the primaries overall this year, and when you look at where Senator Obama is doing so well, where he's overperforming in some states, ironically, I looked at this last night in preparation for the segment, is that when typically that's when there's a lot of mass confusion. It's because there's just so many people that are standing in line that the poll workers and or the machine simply just can't handle it.
Well, I want to thank both of you gentlemen for coming in. There's not going to be a definitive answer right now, and there's going to be, I'm sure, a lot going on, but thanks for coming in.
Yes, thanks, good to be here.
William Poundstone is the author of Gaming the Vote, Why Elections Aren't Fair and What We Can Do About It. He joined me here at our NPR West studios. And Robert Trainum is the D.C. Bureau Chief for the Comcast Cable Network, CN8. He was on the line from our NPR studios in Washington, D.C.